Hey guys, Toolman Tim here. Welcome back to the workshop where we create community, find freedom, promote preparedness, and share success. Well, I'm back. It's been 2 weeks. Tonight, for the record, is December 30th, 2021, and we have reason to celebrate. It is episode number 50 of the workshop podcast. So first off, I want to say thank you guys for supporting this. I don't even know what to call it at this point, this entire endeavor. We, you know, it's a YouTube channel, it's a podcast, it's an online community. And of course, if it wasn't for you guys, it would be nothing. So thank you. Real quick, tonight we are going to talk about, well, actually, step back. I want to say, pretty sure it was Brian from the Lots Project who came up with a t-shirt design called Been Prepping Since Y2K, simply because that was kind of where the genesis of my preparedness mindset came from. It goes back further than that, but that was really one of the big things, first kind of deal I had to deal with as an adult. And so we've got the new year coming up in a little over 24 hours. And I thought, what better way than to look back on the craziness that was Y2K? And I was listening to Amy Digman from A Farmer's Kind of Life the other day in her podcast, and she was talking about how so much of what we worry about turns out to be nothing, or in the words of Stephen Harris, always called it a nothing burger. And that doesn't mean to say that, you know, there isn't maybe a little bit of value in worrying about some things, because that allows us to prepare. But anyway, she was talking about the fact that a lot of what we worry about just never comes to fruition. And I thought, what's a better example of that than all of the hysteria that was around the millennium bug? You guys remember that thing? And then, of course, I'm like, well, I should do a show on that, because it was always something I always joke about and talk about, and I thought it'd be a lot of fun. And then, of course, later on in her podcast, she actually mentions the Y2K bug. I thought, well, that's got to be a sign. So before we dive in to what we're going to talk about tonight, and we may have some special guests coming on. I've invited a few people. If somebody pops in, that'll be great. If not, we'll handle it too. A few announcements, and I'll try to get through this quick. I know it's only been 2 weeks since I've been live with you guys, but it feels like it has been half a friggin' lifetime. So anyway, the first one and the biggest one, it seems like I have something new on the go every single week, but this is huge. This is something we've been working on behind the scenes for a while. We got a new podcast, a collaboration podcast called Fireside Freedom, and it's going to be weekly. There's 8 creators all together. We're going to kind of alternate every second week or something like that. We haven't figured that out completely yet, but it's basically going to be a bunch of like-minded freedom individuals sitting around having a fireside chat about whatever happens to be on our minds that week. It's going to be solutions based. It's going to be hopefully a bastion of positivity. There may be a swear jar involved. It may be even a little more R-rated than what I do here. Just going to be us. We're going to be absolutely authentic and talking about our struggles and all of that. So number two, we are basically back on the regular weekly live stream schedule at this point. So tonight and then Sunday night, we'll have another one. I'm going to have a kind of a grab bag episode on Sunday night. We're going to start back up with live guests the Sunday after, but this week we'll have a Q&A session, me sharing my thoughts on a bunch of different things. There's so much content that I have in the pipeline. It's funny, about 5 or 6 days ago, I was really, you know, I took a solid week off and I was really starting to get the itch to get back on here and chat with you guys. So I've got, the 2 weeks off was great for me. It helped me kind of refresh, and I've got so much running around up my brain right now. So you may even see me do an extra episode or two here or there just to get some of that content out. Number three, just before we went live tonight, we hit 3,000 subscribers on the YouTube channel. This is awesome. So again, thanks guys. I'm a numbers guy. I love milestones, and this was a big one. I got something to show you guys tonight. We have, every winter I try to, well, I say this like I've been doing it for years, but I have downtime in the winter. Basically, my business allows me to have some more free time. So I invest a lot of that in upgrading things on the channel. Did it last winter, did it this winter. We did a new channel trailer earlier. And now we have a new channel intro, a new channel theme song. This one's awesome. If you guys have seen my fellow Canuck, Canadian, Greg Arcade, he's an incredibly talented, I guess you'd call him a country singer. And he has gladly allowed me to use a piece of his music as the intro. So I wanted to show you guys this. You'll be the first one. Here's the worldwide premiere of my 8-second intro for our channel. I hope you like it. Here it is. So I've been eyeing up Greg's music for a while. I really, really like his stuff, and I wanted to get permission, and he gladly gave me permission for that. So I'll do some more down the road showing you guys, hopefully have a way to spotlight the entire song. But he is just so friggin' talented, and I was blessed and honored that he allowed me to use it. So I hope you guys enjoy that. You'll be seeing that in all the videos from here on out. We used that same old generic iMovie theme music for 2 solid years. I thought it was time for an upgrade. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoy that. I hope it, you know, broadens the appeal of the channel. So from here, let's take a stroll down memory lane. So let's go way back. And if you're, you know, under the age of 35, it absolutely might be something we're going to end up reminiscing, and I'll try to fill you in a little bit. So hi, Trekkie Gal. Trekkie Gal says, looks great. Pappy Cannoli. There's my buddy there. Good evening, sir. And Charlotte says she's a few minutes late. That's my daughter. Love you, sweetheart. So anyway, thank you. Yeah, I was very pleased. If anybody's ever looking to get a channel intro made like that, Fiverr's incredible for that. I've had a lot done there. They've done my Toolman Tim logos, the intro, the whole works, and it's relatively inexpensive. So take a stroll down memory lane, like I said. Y2K, take yourself back. Well, let's go way back. Don't forget to turn off your computers before midnight on December 31st, 99. Best Buy was great at putting those stickers on all the computers, and people were great at fanning the flames of fear. And it wasn't an issue that didn't exist. It was absolutely something that needed to be dealt with or could have turned into a really bad situation. The problem is that a lot of people took advantage of it. A lot of people went overboard with it. And a lot of people were like afterwards kind of turned off from the whole idea of preparedness simply because. So if you don't know or don't remember, or you're way too young and you're like, what is this old man talking about? Well, way back in the 60s and 70s when computers really started to become a thing. And Pappy Cannoli says, I remember having to print everything for work. Crazy times. Yeah, it was, right? So back when memory was like, you know, $10,000 for 64K of memory, something like that, every single character meant something. Every single character cost something. And so, of course, the easiest way to shave a couple of characters off something was, instead of putting in the date of 1985, they just put in 85, which was fine until 1999 come up and we all decided we wanted to party like it was 1999. Remember that old Prince song? And they were worried that when it rolled over to 2000, that the computers were going to think, what do I do? It's 1900. It's 2000. I don't know what to do. Everything's going to blow up. And there was a legit concern there. But of course, you know, people were saying, well, we're going to have nuclear meltdown. We're going to have traffic signals that aren't going to work. It was just, you know, everybody just thought, you know, puppies were going to have kittens and kittens were going to have puppies. And we were, you know, I was 18 years old at the time, just in my first year of university. And I remember the world going to shit. They were like, this is crazy, you know. Plus, we all wanted to celebrate. This was like the dawn of a new millennium. It was going to be 2000. And we're like, we want to celebrate, but we're scared, you know? Trekkie Girl says, I'm only 29, but my dad worked in IT at the time. And I remember all the overtime he had to do pretty well, all with the hype. Absolutely. So I went on to social earlier this week and I said, hey, I would like to hear your memories or your thoughts. What do you remember about Y2K? And I, there, it was great. Hey, Ted, nice to see you. And Sunny Land Camper says, I was in Denver that year. I stayed home, gear packed and ready. First sober New Year's Eve. Well, only sober year, LOL. Absolutely. So, okay. It was something. And I guess I went back and I had to refresh my brain on this. But the whole Y2K bug thing first come to, I guess, knowledge or whatever in an online, what did they call them back then? Bulletin boards or IRC chat, something like that, in around the mid 80s. So 1985. I remember first hearing of it in either 96 or 97. I had a chemistry teacher, we called them. Actually, he wasn't even mine, but we used to hang out there in lunchtime. And one day I looked and he had, okay, I don't know if some people know this, but the news used to come in printed newspapers. And if something was really important, we used to cut the article out and we'd hang it up somewhere. So if there's anybody young listening, it was an odd time. Anyway, so he had seen this article about what they called the Millennium Bug at the time. And he thought it was important enough that he stuck it up on his whiteboard. And that was the first time I'd read about it. And it stayed there the entire time, at least until I graduated in 99, and I'm sure until 2000. Pappy can only says, tomorrow night, we're going to party like like it's 1999. LOL, great flashbacks. Glad there wasn't cell phone cameras then. Yes. So, and then Pappy says, what? LOL, if you can elaborate a little bit on that. I was talking so fast, I'm not sure which part was the what. But yeah, so anyway, he put it up there. That's where I found out about it. And that's where I kind of got, I wouldn't say paranoid, but it was one of those things that was always in the back of your head, right? I grew up, if you guys don't know, I grew up in an evangelical church with the evangelical mindset. No judgment, but you know, in the 80s, it was hellfire and brimstone. And we used to watch these movies called A Thief in the Night. And they literally scared the shit out of me. I was way too young to watch that shit. And of course, oh yes, Pappy says printed newspapers. Yes. So anyway, so of course, my entire mindset of that entire time was I was always worried about the quote unquote end of the world. And then of course, all these people said, well, we got to be ready for this. We got to be ready for that. And people did, you know, they stockpiled, they bought, you know, some people bought a case of water. Some people filled their bathtubs. Some people built an underground bunker, filled it with 75 years of food. And they're still eating their dry wheat because, you know, they prepped, right? Ted says, I was an industrial electrician in the American Lock Factory. We were sweating bullets. Most of the machinery was fully automated. We did a lot to prepare, but we all had to be there that night. See, this is why I wanted to do this. I love hearing everybody's, it's like, you know, do you remember where you were when Princess Diana was, you know, died? I remember that for some reason. Or do you remember where you were for 9/11 or whatever? But this one is one of those that, you know, if you're at least in your early 30s, maybe mid 30s, you're going to remember where you were on December 31st, 1999. Everybody does. Everybody remember how much tacky merchandise every single store had. It was everywhere and it was all absolute junk, you know, but of course, since it was, you know, Y2K, they were able to put a markup on it and people bought the stuff like crazy. And then of course, you know, 5 days later, it was worth nothing, absolutely junk, garbage, whatever. When I first came to Alberta in 2013, I believe, one of the things I noticed, I had to laugh, was I went into the local grocery store. And of course, when somebody lives somewhere their entire life, you get blind to background stuff. But I was new and I noticed all these weird things. And I asked my brother-in-law, I said, what are those blue cans up there? So all the way around the shelves at this IGA, they had these empty Y2K cans that were supposed to be sold as time capsules. And they just never sold. There was just probably nearly 100 of them that had just set up there for 13 years. They were never going to go anywhere. When it finally went under new ownership, they disappeared. But it was just one of those things that everybody was excited for. So one of those things where, you know, it felt like the whole world was coming together, but it could also be, you know, the end of the world as we knew it, right? So anyway, been prepping since Y2K. That's kind of my mindset. I was 18. I wasn't living on my own yet. but it really did play a big part in my thought process of, okay, you know, bad things can happen. I should probably be prepared for them, because of course, what's the best way to handle fear is to, I guess, look it straight in the eye and be prepared for as many eventualities as you can. You know, a worldwide computer collapse doesn't seem super, you know, like it could absolutely happen just like that today, but it's always a possibility. And of course, back then people went a little crazy. You know, preachers were on TV selling books. There was the, you know, the Christian's Guide to Y2K, or How to Survive Y2K, or Get Prepared for Y2K. If you put Y2K on it, it sold. So anyway, like I said, I went on to social this week and I said, I'd like to hear your guys' thoughts on where you were December 31st, 1999. What was going on? What did you do? And I got a lot of them. I'll flip through them. Well, you know, if you guys have comments or whoever else is in the comment section here right now, Ted says, wait for solar bursts. Well, you're not wrong, my friend. I think maybe they might even be more, what's the word for it? There's maybe a higher chance of those even than an EMP perhaps. But it's called the Carrington event. And what's it been, 150 years since the last really bad solar flare burnt up all of the telegraph lines? So yeah. And I was thinking about Y2K the other day, and you know, in 1999, we really thought we were completely dependent on computers, but holy crap, if we're not way, way more dependent on computers today, like, you know, and who knows where we're going to be in 20 years. But, you know, I remember like how rudimentary so much of the computer industry was in the 90s compared to where we're at now. It's insane. So first I asked over on Float, if you guys aren't on Float, check it out. You know, I love it over there, but I don't even know how to pronounce this name, but it's J-R-E-F. Said he lived in Salem, Oregon. Nothing happened. At midnight, there was a lot of celebratory gunfire. Had a crew in Manitoba at the time. They had half a hotel or so. At midnight, they got drunk, flipped the main switch, and nobody figured out till morning. So that was a story I heard from a lot of people. A lot of jackasses out there thought it'd be really funny to turn their power off in their house and scare people. But yeah, that's what it was. And so did anyone else grow up in a town? You know, little side tangent here, but for a lot of years when I was a kid, when it hit midnight on New Year's Eve, my dad and I would go out into the backyard and we would shoot the shotgun off up into the air. And this was not a small, you know, it was a town of 2,500. Our neighbors were right there, you know, and it was a common thing for five or six people in the town to fire off their guns. I cannot imagine that it still happens to this day. But, you know, I was a teenager and we were still doing it. So it seemed like, I'm sure there's other places that do it. Luke Cole says he remembers it was the only New Year's that a major retailer that I worked for actually closed down because they didn't know if their point of sale system was going to work at 12:01. So there was a lot of, you know, cautionary stuff, you know, just, well, we're not really sure what's going to happen. Sunny Land Camper said we did the same pretty much everywhere. Yes. And, you know, everybody was like, well, you know what? Let's go home. Let's party like it's 1999. And we'll go to work in the morning and we'll see what happens. I remember them talking at Home Hardware where I worked. They talked, the boss had went in and ended up staying there past midnight just to check on it. You know, it was about 5 years after that when I first started there. But, you know, you heard the same story from everything. This one's cool. Robert 416, he said, Y2K was my first major prepping effort. Was let down by all the hype of the non-event. Took several years to realize there were other legit reasons to be prepared. Some more subtle and close to home. And yes, I'm going to talk a little bit later on about some of the things, the three different types of people that had to deal with Y2K, the bug. And of course, we all know we can take this entire concept and run with it with, you know, in any other aspect or bad situation, right? But yeah, one of the things I kind of worried about or think about was how many people were excited to be prepared for something bad. And I'm not saying they were excited for something bad, but how many people were excited to be prepped up for something and then were turned off from it afterwards when they felt like they were maybe lied to, even though they weren't, you know, even though, you know, it seems like the IT industry did incredible work to fix all the computers, I think there were some people that were like, well, shit, I now have, you know, 30 years worth of freeze-dried meals. I've got more food than a, you know, than a Mormon tabernacle, and I don't know what to do with it. Craig, sorry, guys, I've been forgetting to bring up, I should have been bringing up these comments on the screen for you, but Craig says, I was hunkered down with my children at my aunt and uncle's house. We had plenty of firewood, food, and water, several computer geeks, and lots of firearms and ammo. Yes, and that seemed to be the story. Most people were like, you know, better safe than sorry, right? We'll be prepared. We're not going to go crazy. You know, we're not going to be like that, the cult that wore the Nike shoes. And, you know, anyway, you know, but we're going to be prepared. And that seemed to be, you know, about 50% of the population at the time, for sure. Vibe of 100 Monkeys over on Float said, was a bit disappointing, although I was studying IT, so knew nothing major would happen. Kind of wanted the banks to crash, though. Remember waking up thinking the world has ended, though. Yeah, so there was a lot of that, right? I'm sure there was some people who were disappointed. They thought, you know what, this is my chance. Total anarchy. We're all in trouble. But yeah, it was, I kind of wish I'd been on the inside knowing more about what the IT industry was doing, because I think I probably wouldn't have been so scared. I mean, I was 18, so I shouldn't have been too scared. And I wasn't, you know, paranoid, absolutely, you know, really, really upset. But, it, you know, I think if they'd have spent more time talking about all of the different preparations that were being done, maybe people wouldn't have got so absolutely paranoid. Sunny Land Camper says, man, I had to finally move off grid to use all the gear I've acquired over the years. Yeah, that's kind of the way it goes, isn't it? I had a story. I forgot to ask if I could share this story, so I won't say specifically who it was, but somebody I asked the story about the other day. I said, share your Y2K stories. And they told me that their parents have or had a Y2K room in their basement stocked full of food. And it's still there today. And the person's mother still calls it the Y2K room. And there's stuff so far past expiration date that's never, ever, ever been touched or dealt with. Things like mayo and tuna and anyway. So there was a lot of money wasted or spent on things that maybe shouldn't have been. But remember, we can look at this even today and think, you know, sometimes the hype doesn't live up to the expectation, right? Ted says, I was hands up. He says, made me stay after my shift and ring in the new millennium in a factory for a big nothing burger. Yep. That's what it was. And I guess, you know, to be fair, looking back on it, it's probably a good thing that it was a nothing burger. I'm happy that it was, but again, leave it to the media and the world in general to just take something and absolutely run with it. Right. David, he says, I'm in the IT business. Y2K was real, but in general, IT did a fantastic job of fixing the issues. Says, I sell accounting software. I did have a couple clients who were skeptical. They thought the Y2K bug was complete BS. January 2000 come along, and all of their AR, accounts receivable, accounts payable, aging, and due dates were completely scrambled. I fixed a lot of PCs with old BIOS chips. If I recall, the one bad thing that did happen was some US spy satellites went dark for a few hours. Anyway, thank the IT peeps for fixing it all and getting us past it. So yeah, you know, it's crazy, right? An incredible thing where actually as humanity, we all came together, or at least a certain portion of society did, work together and fix something that was fixable. And I think part of it was having a really big head start, knowing about it ahead of time, having a very specific problem that needed to be fixed, and able to kind of throw unlimited amount of money at it. Kind of worked. Sunny Land Camper says, the money people dropped on Y2K was crazy. It was like when people really started spending, you know, I was still kind of 16, 17 in high school, but I remember somebody else had mentioned, I might get to it later, was at that time, every single mall had a Y2K shop in it, and they all sold junk. You know, get your Y2K multi-tool made in China that'll guaranteed to break on your first use, you know, that kind of stuff. And it was just, you know, legitimately so, people wanted to look out for themselves. It was kind of, I kind of liken it to the great toilet paper hype of 2020. Same type of thing. Everybody knew they had to do something. So they're just kind of like, take my money, here it is. You know, I always joke with my son that whenever he walks into a store, he always feels like he has to buy something. And I'm like, he just wants to throw his money at a retailer, you know? And that's the way it is with this kind of stuff. Hey, Ken dropped in. That's the thing with like Y2K. So a lot of times when there's something bigger than ourselves, we look at it and we're like, shit, I can't fix that. But you know what I can do? I can throw money at it, or I can throw time at it, right? And that's what it was. And that's where a lot of those Y2K shops in the malls kind of, you know, that's what they cater to. Let's put it that way. Skyler, if you guys remember Skyler, he was on here a little while back as a guest, said my family was all prepped up for Y2K. I can't remember how old he is, but he says, as a kid, I didn't know a ton about what was going on, but I thought it was pretty cool. We all went to my grandparents for New Year's, and my dad snuck out. Another story like this. My dad snuck out and killed the power right at midnight. Most of the food they bought in preparation was from the Mormon cannery and is still good to this day. I ate some of the dried apples a year ago and they taste great. So, you know, not everything was bad. And if you treated this like any other preparation and you bought things that you'd actually use and you bought things, you know, what is it? Two is one is none, and three is a guarantee. You know, if you have redundancies and you bought things that you could actually use and you bought things that were shelf stable that would last for decades, then you probably weren't out much. But if you bought a whole bunch of stuff that was going to expire tomorrow and, you know, that kind of thing, well, then maybe you bought into the hype a little bit. Aaron Lemaster said, mostly remember just hearing about technology failing and the crazy preppers. Again, right? That's kind of the way it works. The media always loves to look at people and say, oh, you know, but you know what? Last year, when the entire world was going crazy for shit tickets, butt fluff, whatever you want to call it, everybody needed toilet paper. My wife and I were just sitting back and we're like, guess what? We don't need any. And some family members couldn't get any. No problem. We have lots. We always have about a year's supply on hand because, you know, that's just one of those things that you can control and you can have. And yeah, you might as well. And isn't that just called what being a proper citizen, you know, looking out for yourself and making sure that you have what you need so that when there is shortages, you don't need to run out and take from everybody else? Crazy preppers, right? Then over on MeWe, Matthew Duffy said, I was 12 at the time. I don't really recall much being a whole lot different. Maybe my parents were a little bit concerned, but I didn't notice if they were. We ran out at midnight and rang cowbells, blew bullhorns, and my friends just like every year. That's all I remember, he said. And that's cool. Hey, when you're a kid, a lot of times you don't know what's going on. But, you know, we all celebrated. Everybody wanted to be excited for the millennium. And it was kind of a shame because it kind of took away just a little bit of that. But I remember watching, I think, and this is going to sound kind of foolish or stupid or whatever, but at the time, I really remember my dad and I were watching CNN, and they had the every hour, they had the New Year's celebration from around the world. I think it started over in like New Zealand or Australia, somewhere like that. It was the first time I really clued into the fact that that's kind of how time zones work. You know, you're like, oh yeah, they celebrate it before then. And I got to say, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to my buddy, Jaggy Thistle. He said, morning, brother. Hope you're well. 2000 was a very loud New Year. I bet it was. Jaggy's my brother from another mother over in Scotland and a pen pal to my family. I always appreciate his input. He's an intelligent dude. We've known each other for a long time. So, and it must be like, what, 4 a.m. over there, Jaggy? So you're crazy, but thanks for dropping in. Brian K. Buck said, people spreading fear porn in order to make money. Some truth to that too. You know, I think there's probably some legitimate people out there that were looking to help people, but there was a lot of people looking to cash in, make a quick buck off of, you know, actually, if you guys want to have some fun, go to Amazon someday and type in Y2K book and look at all the books. Most of them are out of print at this point. So 2:30 in the morning in Jaggy Land. But yeah, so go on Amazon, type in Y2K, and there's still a ton of out of print books that were on there. People just put them together and decided that it was time to make money off it, right? So Pappy, I didn't know that you were a Mormon, buddy. This is great. So, okay, he says, being a member of the Church of Latter... I think this means you are, right? If I'm wrong, just correct me here. He says, being a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a lot of people were looking at our prepping strategies. I have to admit, being ahead of the curve for Y2K was nice. Absolutely. And I think that has got to be the absolute, one of my favorite things about the Mormon Church is how you guys take such a practical look at preparedness. I'm going to see how many P's I can throw out there, but and you could fill me in a little more on this, Pappy, but it's part of your religion to have X amount of supplies on hand. Is that the idea? And I think that is just absolutely proper for everybody, but I think it's great anyway. So yeah, that's cool. And yeah, and isn't that why we prep, is to be ahead of the curve? You know, when everything started happening last year, my wife and I were like, well, what do we need to do? We went out and picked up a few more over-the-counter things of medicine and one extra box of masks because we thought, well, you know, maybe we should. We just kind of took quick stock. It's not like we had to run out and completely stock up an entire first aid kit or anything else. It was just one of those things. We're like, well, we've got everything. Where can we shore up our preps a little bit? And that's the beauty of already being prepped, is you just look at it and think, okay, what do I need to do here? But yes, being ahead of the curve is huge. Letty Lou, she's a fellow content creator that is going to be on the Fireside Freedom Chats with me. She said, all the warnings about computers not working due to the double O. It was also the only time I babysat New Year's Eve and the kids were complete shits. I love that. Who would think kids on New Year's Eve being shits, right? But I did watch PBS once they went to sleep and rang in 2000 in several time zones. It was pretty neat. I thought that was really cool. Jaggy says, I wish we had the big LDS warehouses to get preps over here. Yeah, I would love that too. I would love to know if we had some up here. Between the LDS warehouses and the Amish stores that my fellow, I guess you're not my fellow Americans, are you? I'm a Canadian, but of all our American community members have, I love some of that stuff. Yes. So Pappy says, yep. And we all work to not only be ready, but to be able to help others. See, that gives me chills. I love hearing that because again, you know, that's what my wife and I try to do as well. We try to have an abundance so that when someone does legitimately need something, we're able to help, right? It's one of the best things. So I love hearing that, Pappy. Thank you for sharing that. And it's good to have you here too. Pappy's always got a special place in my heart. You guys know he got me on the Prepper Broadcast Network, and that was huge. I always liked that. So then I asked over on Instagram too. I don't know exactly who this is, but their handle is Everyday Fleet Tech. They said, I remember asking people, why freak out? Computers aren't artificial intelligence and won't delete your accounts. And says, Y2K is the moment I realized how stupid humanity had become. Perhaps, you know, I mean, yeah, we look at it and every time there is a huge crisis, there are some absolute idiots out there, morons, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. And yeah, it's true. And some people get paranoid and they go right crazy. So let's read Jaggy's comment here. He's being a Scotsman, think Groundskeeper Willie, I was very drunk on Hogmanay and New Year's Day, extra drunk just in case a plane fell out of the sky. Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm sure I butchered whatever that word was there, Jaggy, and I apologize, but I can just imagine. And I think it would be quite fun to have a conversation with a drunk Scotsman because it might be difficult to understand. And Sassy Gal Prepping, she said, same here. Y2K was when my eyes began to open. And that was kind of the genesis behind this entire episode tonight, was that exact thought. I guess you could say, was kind of the moment that kind of opened my eyes. And I thought, okay, you know, I was 18. I was a freshman in university. And 3 years later, I graduated and moved back to my hometown and moved out on my own the very first time. And Hogmanay. Okay. That's what Jaggy said that was called. So I moved out on my own. And you know, one of the first things I did was I went back to mom and dad's, and their house is damn near 100 years old now. And there's, I wouldn't call it a crawl space, but about a 4-foot basement. So it's basically crawl space for me. And I went in there and I found all of my grandmother's old mason jars that had been in an old crate down there, many crates actually. And they were full of cobwebs and dirt and mud. I took them all back to my apartment, washed them all up, and I learned how to make strawberry jam and pickles. You know, my thoughts were, hey, I got to learn something. And I remember thinking, right, but even back then, if the shit hits the fan, I can at least live off of strawberry jam and pickles. And I made a shit ton of them, and I learned how to can. And all of that could go back to the whole idea of Y2K kind of giving me a kick to the ass and scaring me a little bit and saying, all right, Tim, here it is. This is what could happen. Thank God it didn't happen, but this is what could happen, or other things. And you know what? Someday you're going to be married and have kids. Didn't take very long, did it? And you're going to want to have a mindset of preparedness to look after them with all of that. And so that's what I worked on. And, you know, it was kind of neat, but in my mind, I was preparing for having a family even before I had a family. And I always thought that was kind of cool. This one's a little longer. This is the last one I picked up off social that I thought was good enough to share. This is from Honor Harrington. He loves to send full-fledged comments to me, and I appreciate his input because he sends a lot of really top-notch stuff. But he said, and this was really cool. I loved his mindset behind it. And yeah, anyway, I'm going to read it to you. So he said, Honor says, this is what we did as a family. I prepared. I didn't get stupid. I lined up 2 years of vacation. It doesn't mean 2 full years, but if you got 3 weeks in 1 year and 3 weeks in the other, he took 3 at the end of the year and 3 at the other end. So we lived at our bug out place for 6 weeks, which is now our retirement home. Got a lot done, played a lot. It was a great vacation. If it was a no-show, it was great practice for any prepper scenario. My boys loved eating blueberry pancakes for 2 years, a 5-gallon bucket worth. We learned how to grow our own wheat, thrash it, and grind it for homemade bread. So to me, okay, Honor did everything right there, right? So he prepared, whether times get tough or don't, we all know where that saying comes from, you know, Jack over at the Survival Podcast. But to me, I had to break this down because it was awesome. First off, he made the best of his situation. He was able to take 3 weeks vacation at the end of 1 year and 3 weeks at the beginning of the next. So right there, he was able to, without losing any money, he was able to smack together a 6-week window, 3 weeks before, 3 weeks after. If the metaphorical shit actually hit the fan, that would be long enough to figure out what really was going to happen. Number two, they went and lived at their bug out location, which is now their retirement home. So they didn't just buy some hole in the wall that you could run off to and live just in case something bad happened. They bought themselves a retirement property. So their bug out location eventually became the place that they went. And then they used the time to learn skills and eat food and spend time as a family. To me, that is what prepping is all the frig about. That was just, I loved it. That was the best story. And I thought it was really cool. Getting all worked up here tonight. It's a good episode, right? Sunny Land Camper said, Waco and Ruby Ridge woke me up. Absolutely. I got to say, I remember Waco happening, but I didn't know a whole heck of a lot about it at the time. I've read on it a lot since. You are not wrong, my friend. So Jaggy says, I had 3 months worth of British MREs, 24-hour ration pack stash, the perks of being a military medic and giving the store a no PT and standoff chits. Well, I understood most of that. And that tends to be where I get my MREs now, is from the surplus stores. And it's usually guys that were doing training or exercises. I forget what they call it. And they always had lots left over. They'd bring them in and sell them for pretty cheap, but that's the way to do it. You could have gotten by on those for a long time. So British MREs, Jaggy, I'm betting they're basically full of tea and crumpets. That was kind of mean, but there's probably like 6 bags of tea in every ration, right? And it also comes with its own little electric heating pot for their tea. I'm sorry. I shouldn't be so mean, but Yep. Pappy, Ted, they all agree with Sunny Land about Ruby Ridge. Yeah, there's an incredible, there's a really good documentary. I didn't even really know about Ruby Ridge until maybe a couple years ago. My wife and I watched it. I didn't realize how it kind of tied into all the rest of the stuff. Anyway, it was really, it's kind of creepy, some of the stuff that happened there. And yeah, it's not a bad thing to be prepped for something like that. That's for sure. So when we look at the hype that was Y2K, you know, all of the craziness surrounding it, I kind of broke down everybody into three categories, three, and I hold up four fingers, right? So yeah, so the three types, those were, and this works for just about every situation, but you know, the ostriches that stuck their head in the sand, the people that just ignored it and said, hey, it's nothing, right? I don't need to worry about it. I'm good. I'm just going to keep living life. I'm going to party it up and have a good time. And that's all there is to it. And any situation that could possibly need to be prepared for, there are always those people, you know. You know, I always think about Noah and the Ark and all the people that just stood there even when it was raining, and they're like, oh, okay, I'm good, you know, whatever. The second type were the people that maybe, you know, this was kind of the one that I was, you know, maybe bought a case of food and some bottled water. We bought a case of food and we filled our bathtub full of water just in case. We figured, might as well do something. That was about the extent I knew of it. We did a little bit, and that was really all there was to it. And then there was the third. Those were the ones who were fully prepped. Some might have went overboard. Some might have regretted it. And some, like Honor there, just used it to build themselves a better life. And yeah, you know, and that was kind of, that was the big part of it. And so, and we can take that and we can look at all these situations. It doesn't matter. It could be the bullshit we're dealing with now. It could be something we don't even see coming yet, but there's always going to be the three types. There's going to be the ones that are going to stick their head in the sand and say, yeah, I'm good. I don't need to worry about it. food's always going to be in the grocery store. Toilet paper is always going to be coming on the trucks. I don't have to worry. There's going to be the some that's going to be like, yeah, maybe, maybe not, you know. Like, well, back up a little bit, like the people in Hurricane Katrina that said, nah, we've been through worse before, we'll stay here. And then they ended up, well, you know, they had a bad day or worse, right? And then there's some that do a little bit, and then there's some that do a whole lot. Now, Jaggy, he says, I was prepared from a child but didn't know it. Mom used to put things away for rainy days, which I continued as an adult because of the IRA bombings on mainland and Scottish bad weather and power cuts. See, now, I don't know, Jaggy, if you grew up kind of in a rural area, but that was kind of the mindset where, you know, where I grew up in Nova Scotia, of course, we would have, you know, the tail end of hurricanes all the time and blizzards to, you know, to just beat everything, right? And everybody always talked about the Groundhog Day storm. And I'm pretty sure it was 1972. It was in the 70s anyway. And it was a hurricane, but in the middle of winter. And if you know Nova Scotia, at the widest point, I want to say it's around 200 kilometers wide. So ballpark, what's that, about 150 miles, something like that. And inland, just a little bit on the coast where I grew up, they found saltwater spray. So that means that the saltwater was picked up and basically thrown, you know, 150, 200 kilometers inland or across land from that. Anyway, worst storm they ever had, you know, power poles were down. Where my dad lived down Digby Neck, which is a tiny little isthmus, I think that's what they call it, or peninsula, sorry, at the end of Nova Scotia, they were without power for 5 days, which was bad enough. But then if you were further down where they call the seawall, that's where the water comes in and washes out underneath the road, anybody beyond that was something like 10 to 14 days without power. Now, in the 70s, it wasn't as big a deal. People were used to that kind of thing. You know, my dad and them, they had an outhouse and they had a gravity-fed well. So they weren't, you know, horrible. They put blankets around their deep freeze, and that was about all they were worried about. But again, this was winter. You know, a lot of people out there have wood heat, so that helped. But all of those nasty storms were built into the fabric of people who grew up in Nova Scotia, people who grew up in seemed to be rural areas. We just had to be a little tougher, a little bit harder. And it was always called being, you know, sensible, being practical, being prepared. It was all in the fabric of who we were, right? But, you know, like I said, it was legit scary at the time, Y2K, for a lot of people. People were concerned, and they thought, okay, maybe this is the end of the world. Maybe it isn't. And I think there was a lot of people who spent some time building bunkers and stockpiling a lot of food that maybe were disappointed and thought, you know, I guess this kind of turns me off. And to me, that was the biggest, how do you want to put it? My biggest concern coming out of all of this was how many people spent way too much money on it, burnt themselves out, couldn't sell their stuff afterwards, whatever it happened to be, and ended up, you know, having a bad taste in their mouth for being prepared, and then got caught with their pants down the road for something that would have been much easier to prepare for, much simpler, and a lot less expensive, right? You know, something that's way more likely to happen would be, you know, an ice storm in the middle of winter that knocks your power out for 2 days. And that is a lot easier to prep for than an entire computer collapse because of Y2K, right? So anyway, I always thought how do you want to put it? Made me sad, or I felt bad for the people who got turned off from being prepared, because being prepared does not have to be a scary thing. It doesn't have to be a super expensive thing. You know, but there was a lot of charlatans out there that were trying to make money off it. And I think my absolute favorite, and I ran across this video a while back. I watch a lot of, you know, in my downtime when I'm not creating content and that kind of stuff, I have some video channels that I like to watch. And I'm not sure which one this was on. I want to say it's Best of the Worst. It's this channel where they're called Red Letter Media, and they play old movies that are absolutely painful to even watch, and then they do commentary on them. And I want to say it was on there, but anyway, if you guys remember Leonard Nimoy, good old Spock, well, he even got into the Y2K hype, and he did an hour-long video on how the world was going to end due to Y2K. And if you want to find it, it's a good watch. It's on YouTube. It's seriously dated. It has that, you know, mid-90s aesthetic to it. It looked like all of those shot on video TV shows. It's hilarious and completely inaccurate, but it was kind of funny. And to be honest, old Leonard Nimoy didn't have a real good track record, because in 1978, he did another video warning everybody about the coming ice age. So he was either a doom and gloom prophet or just loved to make videos for money. I'm not sure which one it was, but if you ever want to be entertained and you have a couple hours to spare, but an hour and a half total, go back and watch Leonard Nimoy's Y2K video and his new Ice Age video. Now, here, Jaggy says, I think some Brits whose parents lived through World War II having air raid shelters and rationing continued the mindset afterwards in the 70s. The three-day week, strikes, rolling power cuts, and fuel shortages. Absolutely. So, you guys know, I went home. I guess Alberta's home for me now, but I went back to the town I was born in, where all my family is, and I got to see my grandmother. My grandmother's going to be 100 in August, so she's 99. She is a shell of the woman she used to be, but she still has her mind with her. She can't hear because she won't wear a hearing aid, but I love her to death, and I hadn't seen her in almost 5 years. It was bittersweet. I had a couple of really good visits with her, but she, you know, I turned 40 this year. As long as I can remember, she has been a senior citizen, you know, so she turned 65 when I was 5 years old. So she's been 60 or older since the day I was born. So she's always been an old lady to me, but she had these, green shades in her, all the way along in her house. They were like room darkening pull down shades, you know, and we always had to put them down every time at night. And she always said it was because during the war, they were always concerned, even in Canada, that there'd be airstrikes. And so they had to make sure there was no light coming out. And she lived through, you know, she was, what, in her early teens during the Great Depression, or, you know, 10 to 12, that kind of. So she lived through it. You know, she reused her margarine containers, as she called it. You know, she kept her bread in the fridge to, you know, her appliances lasted. I don't know how she did it, but, you know, until I was maybe 25, she had one of those ice chests with the pull down handle. Like they just were cut from a different cloth, and they knew how to make, you know, how to turn a dollar into $2 and how to stretch absolutely everything. And they lived, you know, her husband, He took an awful fall on the ferry one time where he worked, and I didn't know this for a while, for a long time, but he was out of work for a couple of years. So she basically had to raise the kids with no money, and they managed to do it. So yeah, that entire World War II generation, would they have been, I don't even know what were they, the greatest generation, I think they were called, because they were the ones that after the war, they got real busy and started making the baby boomers, who are now the old people, right? But anyway, yeah. So that entire mindset, Jaggy, you're absolutely right. The whole World War II, Great Depression mindset, they just had to live a different way and they had to be practical about things. And to them, the entire mindset was, we have to make do, we have to be safe. We, you know, they were okay with being uncomfortable if it meant a better life down the road just a little bit, right? So yeah, that was, yeah, I couldn't have said it any better, Jaggy, for sure. But, you know, like I said, I think a lot of people maybe got turned off from prepping because of this, but I thought I'd look back and I say, you know, what is the legacy of Y2K? What really came out of it? And, you know, for the most part, it was, you know, it's long expired food still sitting on somebody's shelf down in the basement, totally forgot about, off in the Y2K corner of their basement that they didn't think, you know. Chris says, hey, sorry, I'm on a Zoom, dropping a like and wish you a happy new year. Happy new year, my friend. We'll maybe see you Sunday night if you're around. But yeah, so like I said, all this stuff, whole bunch of dusty old food that people forgot about. And that's a shame, you know. Disposable keepsakes put away in a cupboard somewhere. Every single dollar store, every single department store had Y2K merchandise that was worth literally nothing the next day. And the absolute best one, and I don't know if you guys hadn't or have heard this story or not, but you got to look it up because it is pure government through and through. And you may not believe me when I tell you this story, and maybe some of you have heard it, but in 2017, President Donald Trump ordered the government to finally stop filing Y2K compliance paperwork. 17 years after it turned out that Y2K wasn't as big an issue as they thought, or the problems were solved, the government was still filing paperwork to say, yes, we're Y2K compliant. If that isn't a perfect analogy of the ineptitude of government, I don't know what is. So, to me, that was one of the most, longest lasting or the funniest legacies that come out of it. But Google it. It's a pretty cool story and it's kind of sad when you think about it. But like I said, you know, a lot of people probably felt like they'd been sold a false bill of goods on Y2K, but the truth was somewhere in the middle. You know, I love this, you know, what is it? Run down memory lane. I love, nostalgia can be an addictive drug. We don't want to live in the past, but we certainly want to at least learn from the past so that we can improve and do better. But what's kind of cool about it is as you get older, you realize, like I try to tell my kids, we've been through worse, we'll make it through again. Because the first time you deal with something like that, you can almost feel like the entire world is going to end. You just feel completely lost because you're like, well, this has got to be it. This has got to be the worst. And then like when I was listening to Amy's podcast the other day, you know, she was talking about how things were, you know, so many things that we think are going to be the worst, people have dealt with so, so much worse. And we end up, we have blinders on, especially when we're young. And then as we get older, we realize, geez, I've gone through some serious shit before and I'll get through that too, right? And that to me has got to be, you know, the biggest legacy. And like I said, somewhere in the middle, was the world going to end? Probably not. Was there a legit concern that something bad was going to happen? Yes. Could something bad have happened? I think so. Did people profit off it? Sure. Is that inherently bad? No. But people who took advantage of other people, that to me, there's probably a special place in hell for them, right? Anyway, now, some people learned how to be prepared. Some people did it properly. Most people, like the average person in general, didn't do it right, ended up spending money on things they shouldn't have, ended up getting pissed off because they thought, well, I thought this was going to be real and it's not. Now what do I do, right? And so Jaggy says, I think that the TV shows like Doomsday Preppers put people off more than anything because viewers thought crazy people and folks don't want to be seen like that in governmental scaremongering. You're 100% correct, my friend. And you know, I guess confession time or whatever you want to say, but when I first really started my channel, like obviously you guys can tell that I am passionate about preparedness. Too many P's, right? But there, and even maybe still to this day, but there's, you know, part of me in the back of my head, I'm always like, okay, I want to teach people. I want to motivate people. I want to inspire people. I want to encourage people. But if I do this, I still put myself out there to be viewed as a crazy prepper nut. And it doesn't matter how hard we try to show people that we're trying to be prudent and practical and prepared, people still look at us like, you guys are absolute idiots, you know? And okay, so what? So be it. Let's embrace it. We're not crazy. But Jaggy, you're absolutely right, because there are, there's quite a few crazies out there, and they seem to always find them for the Discovery Channel specials, don't they? And that's what really turns some people off from it. And it could be Y2K. It could be all of the bullshit of the last 2 years that we've been dealing with. It doesn't matter what it is, but if we're properly prepared for, you know, the most common situations, if they happen or if they don't happen, it really doesn't matter, because proper preparedness makes our life better either way. That's probably a good area to end on. I was going to, man, there's so much we could have talked about with Y2K, but I thought it was kind of fun. I love going back in the past and looking at things, and I've got a few more episodes coming up. Just so many great ideas. I seriously think I could do a show, you know, 5 shows a week, but that's not going to happen yet. Maybe someday. We'll see. But this, yeah, to me, anyway, let's leave it there, guys. Preparedness should make your life better. It shouldn't make it worse. And Y2K was a perfect example of how it could make it better or worse, depending on how you embraced it and what you did. Jaggy says, but even the crazy people on these programs, I still took tips and ideas from them, despite the fact that some of their scenarios they showed were over the top. And that, my friend, is the truth. The truth is the truth, no matter who speaks it. The truth is the truth, no matter where it comes from. And it can come from someone who's crazy, and it can come from whatever else. But remember, you're absolutely right. You can always learn from someone else. And if you're properly prepared, things are gonna always be better, whether the bad times come or they don't. Right, guys? Pappy, thank you. Happy New Year, everybody. We've got so many good shows coming up. Brother Jaggy, I'll absolutely give the girls a big hug for you, my friend. It felt so great being back in the chair. I've missed you guys. I know it's only been 2 weeks, but Sunday night we'll have another show, and I've got so much great content coming up. Keep your eyes out. If you have any requests, send them along to me, guys. And that's it for me. As always, stay happy, stay healthy, and have a great 2022.